Brian Had a Dream. 10,000 movies, 40 years. This is his journey, and this is your invitation to join along. This is the quest for 10,000.
Hello, once again. I'm your host, Ben.
And I'm Brian.
The man, the myth, the legend. At least in our minds, as we follow him, while he tries to watch 10,000 movies in 40 years of life. Thank you so much for being a part of this, for downloading and listening with us as we have another episode for Brian to be able to talk about his quest, about the movies he's seen, maybe give us a few ideas of movies we'd like to see, and
or movies to avoid.
Or movies to avoid, also, as some of these episodes have shown us. Today, what we're going to talk about is why movies to begin with. Why not rank something and watch something like a bunch of TV shows? Or why not collect a whole bunch of comic books? Or
I did collect a whole bunch of comic books, well, and I sold them.
To fund your
movie
watching.
Because it was an unhealthy obsession.
So we're noticing a pattern here.
And then I collected Simpsons action figures, and I still have those.
So why is it movies about this? What is it about movies that makes you love them so much that you want to try and watch 10,000?
Well, movies in cinema is the preeminent art form of our time, of the late 20th and early 21st century. Now, some would argue that television is rapidly nipping at its heels and maybe has surpassed it.
And that's a topic for another day.
Well, and I will say there are some limited form television programs, miniseries that I will include in my list of movies. The fine line, it's a gray area that I use when making that kind of determination. If the whole thing is conceived and filmed in one kind of thing, then I'll count it as a movie, like a five-episode miniseries or whatever. But if the whole thing is conceived to take a break, come back, see where we are, make another part, that's not a movie. You can't make a movie that way. So that becomes a television series.
Sure. So that helps distinguish it. But what is it about movies? Why do you think they are the art form of our time? And what is it just about them that you love? I mean, you've got to have a love for it to be able to watch as many movies as you have. So what is it that you love about movies?
Well, what I love is when I find a movie that makes just a deep, emotional connection that I can reference, that I can use as a benchmark, that I can kind of use to describe some things that are going on in my own life, some of the emotions I feel. Sometimes a movie can help you discover emotions you didn't know were inside you, or discover something that makes you angry or something that makes you laugh that you didn't realize made you that angry because you just hadn't seen it presented in that way. And that's what I watch for. I watch for those moments in those movies that I'm like, wow, now I feel like I've really... And you can testify to this, I'm the guy that came out of watching Liar Liar, A Changed Man.
You did, A Changed Man. And the reason we're doing this podcast is because many years later you watched Yes Man and finally said yes to doing this podcast.
Yes Man was fantastic. Jim Carrey is my Patronus.
He's your guru.
Yeah.
He's your guru, your mentor.
Not Love Guru. That's a horrible movie.
Below the Mendoza
line. Yeah,
definitely. So I'm going to push you a little bit more. I think everything you said you can say about any kind of art form.
Okay.
You can say that about paintings. You could say that about comic books, even though you sold your collection. You could say that about any number of artistic expressions. What is it about movies that you just resonates with you as a preferred choice, to a preferred lens with
I love television too, don't get me wrong. I'm not down into it. And I love to read, although I think, part of it with one of the joys of movies as opposed to reading is it's you don't have to put as much, it doesn't take as much time or as much energy, as much focus. You can watch a movie that. But I love the communal aspect of movies. I love going to the theater and sitting there with somebody. I love anticipating a movie. I love the hype. I love talking about it later. I love that you can walk into a room and you can talk about a movie that came out within the past couple of years. And you can have conversations with complete strangers. Mm-hmm. That also, some of this applies to television as well, but television is not quite as big an event. You know, we don't all go on opening weekend. We don't all have to, oh, I got to go see. We don't all do that for a television show.
Well, and that, you know, that experience to me of going to the theater, what you said about that I think is one of the key things that you said. And the part that interests me most, and that there is something about that experience, I think, that distinguishes movies from other art forms.
Yeah, well, I mean, you see it sometimes. You see it with a TV show. You may go over and watch an episode of a TV show, but you don't share that whole television show with that program, right, with that person. But, you know, some movies, like, there are some movies that, because of who you saw it with, when you see that film, you think of that person.
Right.
And so it becomes a way for you to, you know, connect with other people who have seen the film and saw it with you.
But let's talk more about that experience, and maybe particularly about the movie-going experience. You mentioned that you tend to rate movies higher that you've seen in the theater anyways. We referred to that there was a season in our lives where we went to the theaters often to see the same movie over and over again. So let's talk about that experience just a little bit, and think about that. Because that's to me what I love about movies. There's something about that experience of going to the theater, even now, that reconnects me with my childhood. So what is the best part, would you say, about seeing a movie in a theater as opposed to seeing it?
Well, I mean, one of the things
way
is it forces your attention onto the movie. You know, you don't get as distracted. You see it more. You tend to get, because the lights are down, the only thing going on is that, unless there are people distracting you or whatever. The only thing is there, you're there to, you've paid money, you're there to see the film, and you get lost in that world in a way you can't watching it on your television or your iPhone or your iPad or whatever. You may come close to approximating that, but you're not going to get the same level of, like, involvement and immersion that you will at a theater. But I will say this, the one thing, you know, a lot of the films, having said that, you know, you would think that I would try to go see more films, but A, it's expensive. But B, too, I think that there are a lot of films that I would just never have the opportunity to see at a theater because they're just not going to play anywhere, not just in Birmingham, but they're not going to play in any theater for any length of time.
Right.
So, you know, and I love finding a film that surprises me. That's also something. When you go into a film with low or no expectations because you don't really know what it is and you come out blown away,
yeah,
I love that.
Well, you've given a very deep philosophical answer about loving that sort of parts of movies. I love that. For me, what I love most about going to the theater, this is true, and it's not that I don't love the other parts, but just going and popcorn tastes better in movie theaters, and Diet Coke is much more refreshing in theaters. And then also, there are times where I've joked about this with my wife. I'd be fine just watching the previews and sometimes leaving after that. And the movie's kind of like a cherry on top.
If you recently saw Fantastic Four, you would have wished you'd left after
that,
the preview.
But yeah, that the movie sometimes feels like a cherry on top. And actually, I remember one of the things when we did go see movies when we were in high school, that might have been an early version of the ranking system or doing that, because we would always look at each other after a preview and go thumbs up or thumbs down.
Well, and I will say that you know, on movies and the medium is changing. Some of this is because of the internet and the kind of like flattening of the world. You know, suddenly other culture cinema is available to us in a way that it just wasn't 5 years ago, 10 years ago. But the other thing about that is now, when we were kids, and even when we were high school age, you would go to a movie and you didn't know ahead of time which five previews were going to be seen. So it was a surprise. And sometimes you didn't even know about the movie until you saw the preview. Now, you don't see the preview until you have already read too many articles about the movie, and you know exactly when this preview is playing, and you know, oh, this movie is going to have the Star Wars preview attached to it. And I think, you know, that surprise, like, oh, wait, that you kind of missed something.
Well, so that's really interesting, because, you know, earlier you said what you love is the communal aspect of it, and you could argue now that we have all this sort of stuff that potential for a greater community surrounding a film is there. But then there's also that drawback of maybe you can know a little too much about something.
And I'm a guy who loves and defends spoilers. I don't have a problem with spoilers. In fact, sometimes knowing what's happening will make me want to see a film I wouldn't have otherwise. But that doesn't mean I don't want to be surprised. And it doesn't mean I don't appreciate a good surprise. I remember back in late 90s when Austin Powers 2 was coming out, they did a great fake preview where you went to the theater and they talked about it, and the voiceover and everything made you think it was a preview for the new Star Wars movie. But at the end, the chair swivels and it's Dr. Evil. And that preview wouldn't work now because the joke would be gone. You know, we'd know the joke prior to. And you know, that kind of playfulness kind of stuff is missing, I think.
Yeah. What other things? You mentioned some of the changes you've seen in movies and stuff like that. Due to the rise of a lot of more digital media, social media,
mm-hmm.
The flattening of the world, I think is what you said.
Mm-hmm.
What are other changes you've seen, and how has it maybe kind of enhanced your appreciation for movies, or maybe what are other things that make you a little bit more hesitant?
I always am a little skeptical when people complain or talk about how technology is changing something. Well, I mean, that's always been the case. You know, we don't all live on, you know, agrarian farms, and nobody laments the days where we did. And we're not all serfs anymore either, you know what I'm saying? So yes, of course the world changes. And just because maybe the family dinner is not going to be as prominent as it was doesn't mean that our lives are somehow going to be not as enriched as they are,
sure.
You know.
Sure.
It's just the world changes, and it always is changing. But one thing I do think, the access we have to filmmakers of all stripes and kinds is amazing. You know, the fact that you can watch films that you would have had to have really, really struggled to find, now you can access most. Now, there are still a lot of things that have fallen in the wayside because, you know, they just haven't come out on DVD or somebody holds the rights to them or whatever. But the access is just unbelievable. And just like with any other kind of art form, you know, the more you get into it, the more you realize that it just opens your mind to different ways to see the world. And one thing I do love about movies is a book is one person's view of the world. You know, it's one person, maybe him and an editor, maybe two or three. But a movie is literally hundreds, if not thousands, of people have contributed their time and their energy and their effort to bring this one thing out there. You know, and if you think about them, you know, you scroll through the credits and you see all of them, but you don't really think about that for somebody, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's their chance to be acknowledged for the work they did to create this thing for you.
And I think, too, you know, that's real interesting to hear you say that. I hadn't necessarily thought of that before. The other thing, and I wonder if this is connected in any way, I feel like it's connected maybe to the accessibility argument, maybe that sense of community too, is that also in this now digital age, I've told friends, had conversations about it, I think we're in a visual age, whereas in other ages we were more
literary
and auditory and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
We get a lot of information, process a lot of things, understand a lot of things now through visual media.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing that has surprised me, something that I see changing, is that everybody can be a movie maker. I mean,
yeah.
Everybody can make their own film. You know, even if it's just a short film, you put on YouTube, a Vine video. We use Skype to talk to people, video conference, do those sorts of things. So there's also not only even an accessibility to things people have done, but also an accessibility of the technology that's used and an affordability of that technology. And that, to me, can create a greater sense of passion and love for that, because it creates more nuance and creativity. And there's probably drawbacks
well,
as
but,
well.
Well, but, you know, I know people that, and we all sort of denigrate, to a certain extent, the term YouTube star, or people that put things on YouTube. But in the late 19th century, there was a new thing called a movie camera that people denigrated and laughed and said it was a fad and it would be ephemeral and it wouldn't last. And, you know, 110 years later, 120 years later, it's a big deal. And I'm not sure that maybe YouTube is not where the future will be, something like that. Who knows? You know, it may evolve into its own unique art form, or it may take its place alongside. You know, it's very hard to make those kind of judgments in the moment. So any opportunity or anything that allows more people to be more creative is a good thing.
Yeah. And you take the good with the bad, because, you know, some of that creativity can also lead to kind of crappy stuff.
Well, sure. But that part of that is just the fits and starts of a medium, you know, and over time the crappy stuff will fade away and will fall. It'll become, if anything, a historical curiosity piece. But the good stuff, the stuff that, you know, is thought-provoking and intelligent and sensitive, that stuff will last.
Last question on this discussion. What is the first movie you remember seeing in the theater?
I remember, I don't know if it was the first or not, but there's a couple of movies I remember going to. When my dad and mom took me to see Return of the Jedi like two times in the theater, and I fell asleep both times. But I remember going to see a reissue of Snow White and Seven Dwarfs at the Alabama Theater, and I couldn't have been older than five or six, and that was a really big deal. And you know, my aunts or whoever took me made it a really big deal, and that was fun.
So from the chronological number one movie on the quest, we move now then to what have been some of the latest movies that we've seen now on this quest. Brian, tell us maybe something that hasn't been on the website yet. Let's look at
One Bad, One Good.
One Bad, One Good.
Because I have a bad one I want to talk about. I recently saw a 1985 television movie version of Death of a Salesman. With Dustin Hoffman,
John Malkovich.
Fantastic movie.
Yeah.
It really was. I mean, and I was aware of the play. Sadly enough, you know, I think for whatever reason, it was not the Arthur Miller play we read. I think we read The Crucible. So, you know, I think you get one or the other, and we got The Crucible. So I had not read the play. I knew basically what it was about, but this version of it just completely just blew me away. It was fantastic. Malkovich is great. Now, granted, the other two people, Happy and the wife, I don't even know her name, they're not as good. And you kind of wish they were a little bit better. You know, you kind of wish it had like a Jessica Lange in it, or somebody else to kind of elevate it up. I think her name's Kate Reid, the actress, but I don't know the character's name. But Malkovich and Hoffman are just two heavyweights. And what's funny is that, you know, this was in 85, so this is 30 years ago. Hoffman was not an old man then, but he's playing much older than he was at the time, and it's a really good movie.
Yeah, it is a really good movie. I think also Brian Dennehy.
He has a small role. He does. He's like the neighbor. He's the neighbor. No, it's not Brian Dennehy. It's Charles Durning.
Charles Durning. Mixed up. Let's see. Who did play that older brother? In that?
I don't think his career has really excelled since then. I think he has sort of had his moment in the sun.
Kate Reid was.
I know that because I just saw the movie, so otherwise I would have forgotten her name.
Stephen Lang. What else?
Yeah, Stephen Lang. You know Stephen Lang.
Gods and Generals. He's in
so many of your favorite films.
He was in Avatar.
Was he a blue person?
Let's see. He was in Gettysburg. The Amazing Panda Adventure.
Oh, yeah.
1995, just 10 years after that story.
Oh, 10 years later, he went from Death of a Salesman to The Amazing Panda Adventure.
Yeah.
That is a career
God
arc.
And Generals, Samuel Jackson. The Men Who Stare at Goats.
That was an okay movie.
Colonel Miles Quaritch.
In Avatar. Okay, Miles Quaritch.
Not one of the blue. Well,
I'm going to move on and talk about...
So that was a good one.
I'm going to talk about... Well, I'll talk about a middle-of-the-road film briefly. I saw Top Secret for the first time.
Okay.
Young Val Kilmer, I think, in his first role. And it's better than it should be because he's so good and charming in it. It's the follow-up to Airplane from the directing team that brought Airplane. And it's not as effective, but it's good. But the movie that I saw recently that is definitely below the Mendoza line.
Wait, for a second. Top Secret was... Who directed Top Secret?
It was Zucker, Abram Zucker.
Zucker, okay.
The guys that Zucker directed Zucker. Airplane. Yeah. It was their... They had... Okay. After Airplane, they made the police Squad, and then this is their next movie.
Right.
And it's... And they tried to do a parody of, like, spy movies and Elvis movies rolled into one. The other movie I saw recently that I think you have mentioned this movie before. I think you may have seen it. Horrible film. Master of Disguise.
Oh, Dana Carvey.
Not good.
Dana Carvey.
I see what they were going for, but it has Brent Spiner.
Oh, Data.
Now you know why Commander Data is his claim to fame.
Right.
He's the bad guy who for some unknown reason has a horrible case of irritable bowel syndrome. And so every time he delivers a little like monologue about how evil he is, he then passes gas.
There you go. Well, to be fair to Dana Carvey,
I like Dana Carvey, but he's a second banana.
Just to be fair, I think it was a film for his kids. But yeah, I can understand.
Do his kids not have a sense of humor?
Why is that? Still, perhaps not as bad as Opportunity Knocks, which was the first Dana Carvey film that was going to make him a star.
Yeah, no, Dana Carvey was not. Dana Carvey's star is going to be attached to Mike Myers. That's how he can be a star, he needs to be. That's like Tim Conway. Tim Conway, great, funny, hysterical person. Cannot carry a movie.
Well, of course not. But Dana Carvey also guy who's
he had some health issues.
On CBS launched the careers of Stephen Colbert and Stephen Carell and Louis C.K. So
He's funny.
Yeah, doesn't mean Master of Disguise was a good movie.
Kevin Nealon, I think, is he in Master of Disguise? He feels like he should be, even if he's not. It's one of those movies that Kevin Nealon should pop up. It feels like Rob Schneider should be in the movie, too, because I think it was produced by Adam Sandler's Productions. But.
Nice. So there you have it, a good movie in Death of the Salesman, middle of the road, Top Secret, and if you're ranking near the bottom tier, Master of Disguise.
Or Disguise-y, that's what they mean.
That's probably the best joke in the film, from what Brian has told us. So, moving on from, ranking those three now to ranking five other movies. Our top five for this episode has to do, since we were talking about movies, has to do with the top five films about the movie film industry.
Okay, number five is a movie that I know you love. It's a little movie called The Muppet Movie.
Yes. I find myself
when I list top five movies that people have been in, if they happen to even had a cameo in the Muppet Movie, it's probably going to be in their top five movies because it's so good.
It's so good. I'm going to be in showbiz.
Yeah, it's a great movie. It's a great movie. Number four, Singing in the Rain.
Okay.
It's about the transition from silence to talkies and how, nearly 80 years later, 90 years later, it's hard for us to, none of us grew up with silent film, so it's hard for us to really understand what kind of a seismic shift that was, because suddenly people that had huge careers, they don't have a career because they sound horrible.
You mean the artists didn't teach us that?
Well, the artists did teach us that, but it's the few people that watch the artists. This movie's a lot of fun. It's got Debbie Reynolds, Gene Kelly, Donald O'Connor, who's an underrated kind of comedic dancer, performer. And it's just, it's one of my favorites.
All right, nice. Number four.
Number four.
Singing in the Rain. Number three is.
Number three is Sunset Boulevard.
Now, that's an older movie also, isn't it?
Yeah, it's from 1950. And it's somewhat about making a movie, but it's about an old silent screen star who's played by an old silent screen star.
I'm sensing a theme here.
Gloria Swanson, who plays Norma Desmond, after her silent career ended, she sort of holed herself up in this mansion, and this screenwriter played by William Holden kind of stumbles upon her, and he's going to write her hit, and she's going to make her come back. But nobody wants to finance a movie with her. And it has cameos from, like, Cecil B. DeMille. And
what's the famous line again?
Well, there's a couple of them. But one of them, I'm ready for my close-up, Mr.
Literally
DeMille. One of them is,
Mr. DeVille.
I'm still big. The picture's got small. And Buster Keaton, who's one of my favorites, he has a small cameo in the film as well, one of his last films.
So, number two.
This is a movie that you may or may not have seen. It just came out last year, Birdman.
I have not had a chance to watch it.
And I guess
yet. Technically
it's not a movie about movies. It's really a movie about plays, but it's a movie about the entertainment industry.
And celebrity.
Yeah,
and that sort
so
of
I'm going to count it as a movie
very
about
meta.
Movies.
I think
it's very meta.
Very
Michael
meta.
Keaton oh, my
played
God.
Batman.
Well, and if it had
Birdman.
Been, by, if anyone but Michael Keaton had been in the movie, I think it loses a lot. And part of the reason I love the movie is because I grew up in love and appreciate Michael Keaton as Batman. So it felt like an inside look behind the scenes of what it's like to be the guy who was Batman. So that's why I love it. Plus, it's filmed in a way to make you... There are edits, but it's filmed in a way to make you think it's one continuous camera shot for the full 2 hours.
Right.
Which is really cool.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I do know it's pretty high on your rankings.
Oh,
such a recent movie.
I do like Birdman. Number one. Coen Brothers. Barton Fink.
And that's another one I've not seen, but
it's
definitely
it's
on
not,
my list.
It's not necessarily for everyone, but it's John Goodman is just wonderful in it. But it's about a screenwriter who he's a playwright, but financial reasons and the money of Hollywood is calling, so he goes out west and now he has writer's block and he can't come up with a script because in some ways it's because he thinks he's better than the medium that he's writing for.
Well, there's Brian's top five list for this episode. Agree, disagree, go to 10kmovies.com or follow Brian on 10kmovies on Twitter and let him know what he missed, like The Player or that Eddie Murphy, Robert De Niro classic.
And let me tell you, Showtime.
Showtime.
It would have been my top five if I had only seen five movies.
You'd only seen five movies about movies, about the movie and TV industry.
I've just seen 5,000 movies too many to have included in my top five anything.
Well, and that seems like as good a place as any to wrap this episode up. Thank you once again for spending this time with us, going on this journey of 10,000 movies. Hopefully you learned something along the way. No idea. Until next time, hope your week is a 10.
10 plus.
Borderline 11. Have a good one.